students who are with us this morning. We have students from Menominee Falls High School. Would they please stand? Thank you. It's good having you with us. You may be seated. And we have students from Brown Deer High School. Would they stand, please? It's good having you here, too, this morning. You may be seated. The students are with us with a program, a national award-winning program. In fact, two national awards for a program run by the State Bar and the Wisconsin Supreme Court. This program is called Court with Class, and we invite high school students and others from around the state to participate with us in an oral argument. And if the invitation is accepted, the students receive copies of the briefs filed in the case and may review other materials as well as speak to lawyers about the case. They then come here, and as part of the Court with Class program, they meet with a justice at noon or right after the close of this hearing, and they will discuss with the justice the procedures of the court in hearing cases. They will not discuss the substance or the substantive merits of the case. Everyone in the courtroom is invited to come to that session with the justice and listen and join in the discussion about our procedures. The justice for today is Justice Diane Sykes, and she is seated to my far right. Next to Justice Sykes is Justice Patrick Crooks. To my immediate right is Justice John Wilcox. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my left is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, and to her left, Justice David Prosser. And on the far left, you will see an empty chair. Ordinarily, Justice Patience Rogensack sits there, but she is not participating in this case. With those introductions and preliminary matters taken care of, I will call our second case for today, which is 02-2400 State versus Washera County Board of Adjustment. Representing the intervening defendants, appellants, petitioners, the Howes, is Brian W. McGrath of Foley and Lardner. He will have 25 minutes. The Assistant Attorney General representing the state will have 20 minutes. William O'Connor will have 10, representing the amicus curiae, the Wisconsin Association of Lakes. And then, Mr. McGrath, you get 5 minutes in rebuttal. That's the lineup. Any changes? Okay. Mr. McGrath.
Your Honor, may it please the Court.
I think what you'll have to do is move the microphone farther up. We're in the process of, once again, changing the sound system. This is a very difficult room to have sound, so you'll have to bear with us until that happens.
Gladly, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Brian McGrath. I represent Ed and Suzanne Howe. There are two issues before the Court in this case. The first is, what is the correct standard to be applied by a zoning board when determining whether or not to grant a variance? And the second is, how does that standard affect Mr. and Mrs. Howe's request for a variance in this case? In this particular case, the Washera County Board of Adjustment, applying its ordinance and state statutes, granted a variance to Mr. and Mrs. Howe for a small addition to their house on Silver Lake that would, in essence, finish a corner of the house. The house was built in an odd shape, and the front left side of the house, if you're facing the lake, was just an empty corner, and a variance was received for a 10 by 20 addition to fill out that corner. The trial court, reading this court's decision in Kenosha County, reversed, saying that the Howes had an existing house, therefore they had a reasonable use of the property without a variance, and with no further analysis, reversed the grant of a variance. The case went to the Court of Appeals, and the exact same thing happened. The Court of Appeals applied the no reasonable use test of Kenosha County, said the house have an existing house, they have a reasonable use without a variance, and affirmed the trial court reversing the Washera County Board of Adjustments. In the Court of Appeals, then Judge Rogan-Sack dissented, indicating that she believed that the trial court had applied the wrong legal standard. So the question before this court is based upon three previous decisions by this court, Snyder, Kenosha County, and Outagamie County. What is the correct standard to be applied by a county board of adjustment in determining whether or not to grant a variance? I'm here to ask you to reverse Kenosha County and to return to the standard in Snyder, or to adopt the standard I think used by Justice Crooks and Justice Wilcox in Outagamie County, which I think is consistent with the Snyder standard, but stated in different words.
Okay, why don't you tell us what the Snyder standard is as you understand it, and then you tell us what you think that the Crooks-Wilcox concurrence standard is, okay?
Yes, the Snyder standard is whether unnecessary hardship or practical difficulty exists.
Unnecessary hardship comes from the statute?
Yes, it does.
Where does a practical difficulties come from?
In that case, Your Honor, it also came from the statute because I believe that was from 62.23.
And we're dealing with the 59.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So in this case, it would be whether unnecessary hardship exists is best explained as whether compliance with the strict letter of the restrictions governing area setbacks, frontage, height, bulk, or density would unreasonably prevent the owner from using the property for a permitted purpose or would render conformity with such restrictions unnecessarily burdensome.
Okay. And what's the Outagamie concurrence standard that you think is similar or substantially the same or is the same?
I can't quote it because I think it's a little bit longer, but it's at page 659. Of the Outagamie County decision, and I think it's a three-part analysis. Justice Crooks, with Justice Wilcox joining, says that the court presumes the Board of Adjustments decision was correct. They then indicate that the board needs to determine the purpose of the ordinance, and then go on to analyze and then apply its discretion in determining whether there is unnecessary hardship in light of the purpose of the ordinance.
Did they apply that there, or did they go off on an estoppel?
I believe, Justice, they did apply that there because the property owner in that case, the Warnings, had an existing house, just like my clients. Therefore, they had a reasonable use of the property without a variance, and the variance was a sun porch. Therefore, both the plurality and my own interpretation of Justice Crooks and Justice Wilcox is they no longer applied the no reasonable use test, but applied a different test and said even though there was a reasonable use, these applicants were entitled to the variance that they received under that analysis. The no reasonable use standard of Kenosha County, I respectfully suggest, should be reversed for three reasons.
And now what's the standard Outagamie used for unnecessary hardship?
I believe
overrule Kenosha. Go ahead.
Pardon me?
What was the standard used in Outagamie for unnecessary hardship, which is the statutory standard?
Do you mean what did the Outagamie County Board of Adjustment use?
What did the concurrence say? If you want us to adopt it, I want to know what you think they said.
Well, I think the problem is that there continues to be confusion about what they said, but what I believe they said is what's at page 659 of the decision.
Right. I'm looking at that.
And it's that paragraph 76.
All right.
And it carries over to paragraph 77 and 78, but I think it's a fairly lengthy analysis, but what Justice Crooks and Justice Wilcox said, as I understand it, is that the board has discretion and that it should apply that discretion in light of the purposes of the underlying ordinance, and that unnecessary hardship should be understood and judged in light of the purposes of the ordinance.
Mr. McGrath,
yes.
Having been there, I recall the discussion that went into Justice Crook's opinion. I had trouble reconciling all the good things he said in that concurring opinion with the Kenosha County case. Was I just historically wrong?
No. I don't believe
that's a trick question.
I understand. I think the answer is no. I think that, the Latin term, I would say, and what I believed after Kenosha County was that, I'm sorry, after Outagamie County, was that it had been reversed sub silentio, if you will, that without expressly saying it, the effect was to reverse it because the warnings had a reasonable use of the property without the variance, but they gave them the variance.
So you're saying the effect of the concurrence was to subliminally reverse Kenosha?
I think the effect of the result of the plurality plus the concurrence. The warnings received a variance, and it was affirmed. The warnings had a I'm sorry?
Right. They go through Kenosha, and they say, we're not doing that.
I understand. That's why I say it's sub silentio.
Right.
But I think the effect was a result completely inconsistent with Kenosha. And I think, Justice, again, with all due respect, that the Kenosha County standard is simply unworkable. It denies local zoning boards the discretion they're granted by statute, makes it virtually impossible to obtain an area variance, and it denies property owners the right to use their property in ways that don't harm others or don't harm the public interest.
And does Kenosha County still govern use variance?
I believe, right, yes. I believe.
Well, if it's workable for one, why isn't it workable for the other?
I'm not convinced that it is workable for any.
Yeah, but the court was, or at least three members of the court was.
Yes, and I suggest that Kenosha County should be reversed in its entirety because its standard takes away discretion from the local board.
But your other position, as I listen to my colleagues interpret our language up here and try to reinterpret the language, I was just going to ask, your second position is that if we did not reverse Kenosha, we should go with the concurrence written by Justice Crooks. As far as the standard to be used when you look at the whether an area or a use variance and distinguish between the two.
I agree with that, Justice Wilcox. I would say this. I think that the Snyder decision is a clearer statement and a more succinct statement of what I contend should be the appropriate standard, but I'm not sure I could articulate a difference between what you and Justice Crooks said in Outagamie County and Snyder in terms of the outcome. So I believe them in my mind to be consistent. I just think Snyder in that one paragraph was a very concise and effective statement of what the standard should be.
And he talks about the purposes of the zoning too.
Snyder. Pardon me?
Snyder, talk about the purposes, because that seems to be a key factor in the concurrence. And and one of the amicus says, well, who knows what the purposes are of most area zoning, and that they don't think that's workable. So what does Snyder do? Does it look at purpose?
Snyder does not, in the same way as the concurrence does, suggest that looking at the purpose of the ordinance should be the first step. But I think when a local board is determining how to exercise its discretion, one of the things it would typically do is it would say, why do we have a side yard setback? Well, we have it to give neighbors breathing space from the lot line. Now, will this particular request for a variance affect that purpose. If the houses aren't aligned so that what one neighbor's going to do is next to a vacant part of the other neighbor's property, maybe that breathing space issue isn't the same. If the houses are perfectly aligned, then that purpose would be more drastically affected by the grant of the variance.
Where does the purpose language come from in the statute?
I don't believe you find the purpose language directly in the statute itself.
About the spirit of the ordinance.
Yes, that's the last. I think you're right. I think Judge Justice, that's the last part of the standard, and I think that goes to typically. I think the way boards attack this is they first look at the unique circumstances, if any exist, with respect to the property owner. How difficult will it be to comply? And then they go to, what will this do to the public interest, which I think is another way of talking about the spirit of the ordinance. It's what I was just suggesting on the side yard setback. The purpose of that ordinance, the spirit of the ordinance, is to give neighbors breathing room. If this particular request isn't going to violate that, then that's a variance that the board might be inclined to grant within its discretion. And I come back to say that this court in Schleck, versus Zoning Board of Appeals, said that a variance decision in a particular case is to be determined by the board in the exercise of its discretion. This court also said if only one conclusion can be reached, then there's no discretion. And under Kenosha County, this court has placed boards repeatedly in the position where only one decision can be reached. Every property owner with an existing home, there's only one decision that can be reached, and that can be seen from our case. The board believed differently and granted the variance, but the trial court and the Court of Appeals said no.
With regard to the concurrence in Outagamie County, you made reference to paragraphs, I believe, several paragraphs, three paragraphs.
Yes.
I'm looking at the concluding paragraph, and it seems to sum it up, and that is the purpose of the – that's paragraph 80. The purpose of the ordinance guides the determination of whether there is an unnecessary hardship that would warrant a variance. Is that your third alternative standard that you are advancing here today?
No, that's not my intent. Because, again, I think that the purpose of the ordinance, the spirit of the ordinance, is part of the analysis, but I think that there's three parts that a board has to look at. That is part one. Another is what hardship exists to comply with the letter of that particular ordinance. And then at the end of that, what is that going to do to the neighbors or to the community? There's some other reason.
When you are advancing the position, as you interpret it, excuse me, of the concurrence in Outagamie County, then the summation of their position in paragraph 80 is not what you would really point to as what their position is. Is that correct?
Well, again, obviously Justice Crooks and Justice Wilcox are far better designed but my view is there's more analysis to it in the three paragraphs that I have pointed to in the decision.
Now, let me call your attention to 56.694.1, which says the county board may provide for a board of adjustment. May provide the Board of Adjustment may, in appropriate cases and subject to appropriate conditions and safeguards, make special exceptions. I assume that includes a variance.
Okay.
Yep. To the terms of the ordinance, in harmony with its general purpose and intent, and in accordance with the general or specific rules therein. That's where I think general purpose comes in. And that's where I think in paragraph 80, is a reference to the purpose of the ordinance. So what you got is unnecessary hardship, general purpose, as well as the reference that both you and Justice Prosser made to the spirit of the ordinance and substantial justice under 7C.
But what I would point out, Justice Abrahamson, is that the Court of Appeals in this case didn't do any of that. They didn't consider the purpose of the ordinance.
The Board of Adjustment.
Pardon me?
Did the Board of Adjustment.
Yes. When you look at their decision, they say that they... their decision does not express... I don't think it uses those words. I'd have to pull it out again. I believe it uses the words of sub 4 of the statute as opposed to sub 1 that you've relied upon. Because as sub 4, then I believe, as I recall...
That deals with the appeals.
Right.
Doesn't have any standards in there, I don't think. Okay.
Okay.
Have you finished? I'm sorry. Just... Go ahead.
All right. I think, in part trying to point out that the trouble that the Kenosha County decision has caused, and I've said that it denies discretion to the local Board of Adjustment. And Justice Nettesheim made the same point in the Spinner case. And the New Hampshire Supreme Court, I think, struggled with the same issue in the Simplex case, which we cited in our brief. They had a no reasonable use test, and they went back from it saying it was too strict, in the same way that I'm asking this court to do.
Under any test, any of these tests, why is this under the statute an unnecessary hardship if to not grant a variance? It's a home. It's used. It has substantial value, right?
Yes.
You might want it a little bigger, right?
Yes.
Might want it squared off so it looks better, or maybe it won't look better, but you want it squared off, that's fine. So what hardship do your clients have other than that they're not getting the exact house that they would like?
What you have to keep in mind, Judge, is... I think we've now moved to the second question in the case, is I think you've done, which is whatever the standard is, how does that then apply to the house, right? Which is what I think is the second issue.
And then apply it to each of the standards.
To each of the...
Yeah.
The no reasonable use test and the... Okay. What happened here is that the existing structure... was remodeled in the past with a variance.
Twice.
When there was a neighbor on that side of the property. So that part of the house wasn't built out so that it wouldn't affect the neighbor. The house then bought that parcel, tore down the neighboring property, and then wanted to expand sideways, okay, into that space. And so the hardship in this particular case was that they was based upon that set of facts, that they didn't expand the house and square it out at the time of the previous construction because of the neighbor.
Is that a vacant lot that they bought? Is that still a buildable lot?
I believe the two lots have been combined into a single parcel. I think you could go back and subdivide it.
That's what I'm asking you. Okay.
Yes, I think you could go back and subdivide it.
Still sell that lot.
You'd have to go back to the municipality first to be able to do it.
Right. And that would be maybe an unreasonable hardship economically if they don't allow that. But that's another issue.
Right.
We'll get to that.
Right. Now, the other set of facts to keep in mind is the house have a parcel with a zero building envelope. The setback from the lake and the setback from the highway overlap. So anything they want to do to their house requires a variance.
Mm-hmm.
So if the standard is no reasonable use without a variance.
Let's try the unnecessary hardship. Let's take the lowest standard
okay. For
variance. Tell me why there's to use the statutory words, unnecessary hardship when they have a habitable house that has a value of over $200,000 for assessed value purposes. What's the unnecessary hardship that they can't expand that house?
Well, I would go back to the Snyder standard, which says an unnecessary hardship would be best explained as to whether compliance with the requirement unreasonably prevents the owner from using the property for a permitted purpose, single-family dwelling, or would render conformity with such restrictions unnecessarily burdensome.
Why is it unnecessarily burdensome?
Because there's no harm done to anybody by allowing that addition. Any addition they would want to put on their house, roadside, side yard, either side, front of the house, so long as it's for a permitted purpose, ought to be permitted unless there's some harm done.
That isn't what the Snyder test says. It doesn't say anything about harm. Snyder test, we just said, has nothing to do with purpose either.
All right. The Snyder test says would unreasonably prevent the owner from using the property for a permitted purpose. Our contention is it unreasonably permits Mr. and Mrs. Howe from using the property for a permitted purpose or
permitted purposes as a residence.
Permitted purpose is a single-family residence, which is what they use it for. And so unlike, and I don't know where any of the justices live, but unlike me or most other people in the state of Wisconsin, we can make small additions to our house without having the state or county interfere.
I live on the lake.
Okay.
Narrow lot, very deep, and probably have a non-conforming use.
All right.
Set it out.
Okay. Non-conforming use for it? Well, I don't live on a lake, so I can make small additions to my house like most people in the state can.
Only if you fit the area requirement.
Right. And most people in this state can. And so the question is, what additional rules do need to be imposed upon the house? Now, there's another important fact here, which is in our brief. Washera County adopted a setback from the high water mark, allowing averaging, but with a minimum of 35 feet. Washera County could have adopted strict averaging, and in our reply brief, I think we give you 10 examples of those type of ordinances. Washera County could have made the Howe's house legal conforming, same as my house, and they could have put this addition on without any variance requirement, without violating any shoreland rules. Washera County instead said, we're going to make it 35 feet, and now you're subject to the 50% rule. Now we get to tell you, once any of the repairs to your house have come up to 50%, what repairs you can make and what you can't. But that's their discretion, and that's their decision about the purpose of the 50% rule. Ultimately, the one purpose of the 50% rule is to make all non-conforming structures go away. We're going to tear them down if we're not going to let you rebuild them. But that's not a sensible purpose in a residential neighborhood where the lots result in some owners being non-conforming. So here, they simply control what you can do on a case-by-case basis.
Counsel, you make the argument that this property suffers because there's no building envelope. I note that this is the third variance requested. And assuming that there is no building envelope for this property, ad infinitum, it is where it is, and the envelope exteriors exist, or the parameters exist where they exist. Does this mean that you are entitled to unlimited variances, 5, 7, 9, 10, because there is whatever standard you use, let's say undue hardship or unnecessary hardship? I mean, will you always be entitled to a variance because of the location of your property?
No, ma'am. We are entitled to seek a variance, and that ought to be the Board of Adjustment's discretion as to whether we're entitled to it based upon its application of the statute. And the problem with the trial court's decision in this case and in the Court of Appeals decision, which we're asking you to reverse, is they don't allow that to happen. They apply no reasonable use. They allow no discretion at all and turn down the ordinance. So, no, we have to go to the Board of Adjustments each time. We have to ask, and we have to satisfy the board who has the most knowledge that we're entitled to the variance.
I just have one question before you sit down. This county board ordinance, do you know the history of it?
And most precisely, was this an ordinance that was suggested by DNR, or is this an ordinance that was drafted by Washera County on its own hook? And then my next question is, what difference does it make?
And are you speaking, Judge, of the section of the ordinance that has the standard for granting a variance, or the section that set the averaging setback?
Any part you want to answer, Counsel.
Section that sets the standard mirrors the state statute. I don't know when it was passed, but obviously after the state statute. I do not know the history of the averaging ordinance, but obviously it had to come out after the state passed the statute that required every county to adopt shoreland zoning.
And you're not attacking the validity of the ordinance?
No. Just shut that off while I do that.
Now, you pushed a button. Right. Thank you. Right. It's only fair we listen to him. Thank you, Counsel. P. Philip. The Peterson, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Wisconsin, Mr. Peterson. Up closer to your counsel. Closer. Put it on your tie. I'm becoming an expert as to placing this. We'll see if it works for you. Go ahead.
I knew there was a reason I wore a tie today. Thank you. Thank you, Chief Justice.
I don't think he's amplified. And we apologize for the sound system. Back to the lapel.
Thank you.
Go
ahead. Am I okay? Good morning. Thank you very much. Good morning. May it please the court, representing the state of Wisconsin, I'm Assistant Attorney General Philip Peterson. This case is a shoreland zoning case. It's about a non-conforming house that's just 30 feet from Silver Lake in Washera County, and those 30 feet are far less than the mandatory minimum 75 feet that are normally required, usually required in shoreland zoning cases. The reason for limiting the expanding of the house within that shoreland setback area is the harm that's done by activity within that area, harm that's done to the waters of the state. There's harm done to the water quality, harm to fish habitat, and harm to the shoreline beauty of the area. And that's so as a matter of statute. The court can note that 281.31 parent 1 indicates that the legislature indicated that's why it enacted the shoreland zoning provisions, is to protect our waters, to protect the water quality, to protect the fish habitat, and to protect the shoreline beauty. And that protection is required because lakes are fragile, and they're particularly fragile within the area on the shoreline between where the waters in the transition area from land to water.
This addition would not go any closer to the lake than the house, as I understand the facts. So what's the big deal?
Well, it's within 30 feet of the water. The legislature has determined that activity within the shoreland area, and the shoreland is defined to go back far beyond this 30 feet. The shoreland area is defined by statute as within 1,000 feet of a lake. This is just 30 feet from the lake. There'd be increased activity during the construction, increased activity because of an increase in the size of the house during the normal ongoing life of the structure.
So the addition is within that is 30 feet back, but still within 30 feet of the shore.
Yes, Chief Justice. Yes.
So you don't want any bigger structure.
Yes, we don't want to extend. This is a non-conforming structure in the spirit of non-conforming use or the spirit of non-conforming structures is to eventually reduce them and certainly not to expand them.
Would you be here if the addition was on street side, so it was just closer to the highway and didn't affect the shoreline?
Well, I don't know the facts of this case, I mean, I don't know all the detail of this case, but if it went back, if it's within 75 feet of the water, and this house is within 75 feet of the water, I think we well may be here. The question is whether or not it exceeds, the expansion would exceed 50%. I believe here it would. And so I think we probably would be here in that case. And we'd be here not just for those of us living today, but the concern about our waters is for future generations. We have an obligation to protect those waters, not just for us, but for any generations that follow who wish to live, to work, or vacation in Wisconsin.
Proposing a separate special standard for shoreland property?
Your Honor, we would advocate that the Kenosha County case is a shoreland zoning case. And in shoreland and floodplain zoning cases involving our waters under the statutes that are pertinent to those particular structures, that the no reasonable use standard is the proper standard. Kenosha County says that, and we urge the court to reconfirm that in this case. So the answer is yes.
Now, the shoreland zoning doesn't apply to cities or municipalities, does it? Does it apply to everyone, every towns, rural areas as much as cities?
Well, the shoreland zoning statute requires, I don't believe that it does apply in the same way. These are rural properties that are subject to the shoreland zoning law. So I believe there's a difference between those circumstances and what we're confronted with here.
Mr. Peterson, at the risk of oversimplifying this, you have a property that's 120 feet deep here, and you can't build on it 110 feet from the highway, 73, and you can't build on it 35 feet back from the lake. You are arguing passionately that the existence of that property is endangering the lake, and that ultimately the goal is to remove that property. That would be in the public interest. But you have Highway 73 here. You have, over the whole history of Wisconsin, cottages and properties being developed on Silver Lake. I mean, it would seem to me what you're saying is that if we in the DNR and the state had our way, we would eliminate all of those properties along Silver Lake.
Well,
and destroy the local economy that's based on those properties. Isn't that what you're saying?
No, Justice Prosser. That's not what we're saying. The law permits maintenance and normal upkeep of the property. We're not saying that the property has to be torn down. We're not saying it has to be removed. We're simply saying that it ought not to be expanded. Unless the requirements for...
Isn't the goal ultimately to remove these properties, to let them shrivel and die?
The goal of zoning generally is that nonconforming structures live their normal life and then not be rebuilt. But there may be opportunity here. The standard that we're arguing for would allow a structure to be replaced if there's no reasonable use without a structure there, and that's the reasonable use for the property, then a variance could be obtained. But that's not the showing that's been made now. That's the standard that has not been met here.
You just said that there's this lot next door that they acquired, not you, but opposing counsel acquired the lot next door, so they could eventually expand. Well, is there, if they don't expand, it's your position that there already is use, it's in the house, and whatever they combine the lots, and it's in the public interest that there not be expansion. Is that in the public interest that there not be further activity within 30 feet of the lake?
Yes, yes, Justice Wilcox.
Yeah, so when you say, so as I gather this reasonable use, what you're saying is that if there's a lot and there's no home on that lot, then there may be, that may conform to the, quote, no reasonable use. In other words, if I wanted to build on a lot and it was, say, non-conforming, but it had no house on it, you couldn't do that, though, could you? In other words, if the lot was there, but it's within the 75 feet. I'm just asking, what is the 75 feet is the rule now. And all of these structures that Justice Prosser is talking about, probably hundreds of thousands, that fall into the non-conforming use category.
Well, there may be the averaging, the setback averaging that would allow for a structure to be built. But even if there weren't, and if a parcel has no structure on it at all, there may be a showing, perhaps could be made, that the parcel has no reasonable use, and a variance could be obtained for that parcel to construct a house on the parcel.
So the phrase no reasonable use has different meanings, doesn't it? It's not a set standard, or is it? What do you think it means?
Well, I think it means no. There's a reason. Is there a reasonable use for the parcel? Means that there has to be something that can happen on the parcel that's reasonable.
Well, what, like camping, or building a tent or building a home? I mean, that's what I'm asking. What would be reasonable? It depends on the circumstances.
Well, I think the Boards of Adjustment have some real, this was pointed out, I think, in Justice Crook's decision, that there's some real authority that the Boards of Adjustment have to make decisions about what's reasonable. But the court has determined that in the case of shoreland zoning, a reasonable use is to have a parcel, have a home on the parcel. And that the importance of our lakes and our water and the protection of them is so important that the no reasonable use standard should apply, and that the use of an existing home is a sufficient reasonable use.
Counsel, just for clarification, are you advocating a standard of no reasonable use, or is your standard more correctly or stated, no reasonable use in light of the purpose of behind the zoning law?
I believe the standard more fully stated is the second, Justice Bradley, and I think the Snyder case really does say that. That's what Snyder says, and that's what Kenosha County followed. Snyder says that at page 473. There's language there that says just exactly what you've said.
Coming from the statute involved.
Yes, I believe that's right. And there are other requirements here too that must be met. We speak and focus in this case on no reasonable use, but the statute is conjunctive in its requirements. The statute being 59.694, parent 7, parent C. It talks about activities not contrary to the public interest, owing to special conditions, where a literal enforcement will result in unnecessary hardship, and so that the spirit of the ordinance will be observed and substantial justice done. So all of those requirements have to be met, and that's why when even one of them is not met, that's the end of the necessary analysis in the case.
So which one isn't met here?
In this case, there are multiple reasons for not granting this variance. First of all, the property owners have not shown that this property is uniquely affected by the shoreland zoning laws. Indeed, a number of other nearby parcels are even smaller or even more confined by State Trunk Highway 73 than is the property here. So for that reason, too, even if there were nothing else to this case, that would be reason to affirm the circuit court's reversal of the Board of Adjustment. And then the House have not shown that a variance is consistent with the public interest in protecting our waters. The purpose of shoreland zoning, as I've indicated earlier, is to protect the water quality, protect fish habitat, and to protect the scenic shoreline natural beauty of our lakes. And here the House have not shown that, particularly when you consider this along with the cumulative effect of other similar variances granted for other houses on the lake.
How does merely squaring off the house imperil those interests?
It's activity within the setback area, Justice Sykes, that the statute in 281.31 parent 1 addresses. And so
that sounds like a per se rule to me, that anything that constitutes activity within that area is, in the DNR's view, going to be prohibited. That says nobody can build anything.
Well, you can't get a variance without meeting the conditions that are required for a variance. And
and the county board here thought that this didn't imperil any of those interests that you have referenced, because it issued the variance, right?
The county board here did issue the variance, but the circuit court reversed the grant of that variance.
Based on Kenosha County's no reasonable use test, didn't get to any of the other factors. Right?
That was a principle. There were other things argued, and I believe the court accepted the other reasons too, but that certainly was one of the conditions.
Right. And as a practical and legal matter, since Kenosha County, the only criteria that matters is the no reasonable use standard.
That is true in shoreland zoning and floodplain zoning cases, but it may not necessarily be true in other zoning cases.
Well, counsel, should you make that concession? I thought you were recognizing that it's not only no reasonable use, but that you have to fill the purposes of the applicable zoning regulations. So you have to fill the purpose of shoreline zoning. I thought that was the whole point of your
That is true, Chief Justice. All the conditions have to be met. So I was assuming we were focusing only on the one, assuming that the other conditions had been met.
Only no reasonable use. It's no reasonable use of the property in light of the purpose of the applicable zoning regulation.
It is. It's all those conditions. All those conditions have to be met. And they haven't been met here. The public interest in protecting our waters, that condition hasn't been met. The Howes are pursuing this variance for family or personal reasons.
That's okay. That's a good reason for asking for a variance. I still want to get back to the same question I asked you earlier and that Justice Sykes is asking you. Namely, what is it about this addition that jeopardizes the shoreline zoning more than the existing structure? Now, I'll concede that during the building stage, it might create dirt, it might create runoff, it may create some problems. But after the addition is built, everything's cleaned up. What is it about putting on this addition that is more dangerous to shoreline zoning and the purpose of this ordinance and statute than the present building?
Well, when the court develops rules, it has to look at what on average will happen. I don't know what would happen on this house, but on average, if you have a bigger house, there's more human activity within the setback area. And also, it has a way of increasing the life of the structure. The spirit of zoning is to limit nonconforming structures. We start here with a nonconforming structure. It's at a location where it can't lawfully be put now without a variance.
Property can't sustain any conforming structure, as I understand it.
The
argument is basically that there should be no house here at all.
Well, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the requirement has to be that the requirement for a shoreland zoning variance is that you have to show no reasonable use, and that showing cannot be made now. If there were no house there, that showing could perhaps be made, but it can't be made, has not been made under the current situation. in the current situation.
Well, they can't tear the house down and you have the 50% rule, so they can't say, well, we want to build. The observation was made there were a lot of other homes along Highway 73.
Yes.
Those people cannot tear those smaller homes down and build a new house, can they?
No, I don't.
So they're stuck where they have the 50% rule I'm talking about applies to everyone there.
Yes. It applies to all nonconforming structures.
Right. That's right.
And presumably all these homes are nonconforming because they appear to be within the setback area.
Well, but the goal, and I just don't want to debate this, but as I heard, the goal is ultimately that these nonconforming structures would cease to exist, and there would be just the trees and the grass there.
Well, that may be the case with a lot that has an area that where you could build elsewhere, but if you can't build anywhere else, a showing could be made. Consistent with the standard that we've advocated, that we are advocating, consistent with Kenosha County.
Well, they can't build any other place because this is the only lot they have, and if the home is gone, they couldn't build on it because it's nonconforming. I mean, the reason it's nonconforming is because they built before this 75-foot rule came into existence. And that's why. In other words, before the ordinance or the state statute came into existence.
Yes,
that
definitely
makes it nonconforming. All
yeah.
I'm asking is that, that you're talking about the goal is of the state is that there would eventually not be any nonconforming use.
Well, that's so, except that if they're eligible for a variance and if they're eligible and can obtain a variance, they then could obtain variance authority to have a structure in these locations.
If I understand the state's position, and if I'm not, you ought to correct it. One, the 50% variance, which is part of the state statutes that govern all nonconforming use, not merely shoreline, is designed so that you can have continuing upkeep and repairs of the building, but you don't want extensions of a nonconforming use. That's the goal there, right?
Yes, Chief Justice.
All right. That, if this is a property, suppose this building burnt down and they want to rebuild a house, they'd have to get a variance because they cannot otherwise build on this property, right?
Yes, there's a particular provision. I think generally that's right. There is a particular provision in the law for destroyed property.
Okay, generally. And your position, if I understand it, and this is a concession, so be careful what you say, your position is if they had nothing on the land, they sought a variance to build a property that would be nonconforming, it would follow the test of Kenosha, which is that the property has no reasonable use in light of the purpose of the applicable zoning, and if they had to do that, if they had absolutely no reasonable use and it lay vacant, then you'd say maybe a variance would be okay.
I noticed the red light's on, but the answer to the question is yes.
That's
sounds
great.
Like then that the house should knock down their house and come back for a variance to rebuild it, and then the DNR would remove its objection.
Well, the house that they could build would probably be a lot less than the house they have now. If they could come back and build another house, it would be the house that would give them a reasonable use, and it would be considerably less than the house they...
So they can't win.
They have now.
You're going to object every which way, whatever they do.
No, there are statutes, there are rules, there are requirements, The state is its objective is to enforce those, and certainly there are things they can do, and they have a very nice structure there now, and
improve it because they need a building permit to make any improvements that go beyond a basic maintenance, replacing the furnace they can do without a building permit, I think, maybe, but any other improvement.
Well, the legislature has imposed limitations, and the DNR, pursuant to legislative authority, has imposed limitations, and those are
Well, maybe those limitations are unconstitutional, in that maybe property owners should be given the right and have rights under the Constitution, federal and state, to use their property, and that all of this is really, you push it far enough, is unconstitutional. Now, nobody makes that argument, and when you look at Outagamie and Kenosha, they don't make the argument either because they recognize reasonable regulations is okay, and that's where you get into no reasonable use. So, do you think it's unconstitutional?
Do I think the shoreline zoning statute is unconstitutional? No.
That'll be a good enough answer for the moment so that we don't get into that. Thank you, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Oh, we hear from Attorney Hanna, representing the Wisconsin Association of Lakes. 10 minutes, Mr. O'Connor.
Thank you very much, Madam Chief Justice, members of the court. I appear today in representing the Wisconsin Association of Lakes. We urge the court to affirm the decision in this case made by the Court of Appeals, reversing the Board of Adjustment's granting of this variance. I agree with the characterization of the appropriate standard that has been attributed to the Kenosha County case, I think correctly, which is the question, would the property owner have no reasonable use of the property in light of the purpose of the ordinance? I think Justice Crook's concurrence in the Outagamie County case makes it clear that the decision that is made when the Board of Adjustment considers an ordinance cannot ignore the purpose of the ordinance. They have to make the determination in light of its purpose. That is in the statute. There are things that aren't in the statute that have been urged. There isn't anything in the statute that makes any distinction between use variances and area variances. There's nothing in the statute that addresses non-conforming structures versus non-conforming uses. What is in the statute is reference to a power of the Board of Adjustment to grant relief, a kind of safety valve, where a property owner would otherwise face an unnecessary hardship. I think that's where the court's focus should be, is on that question in this case, first of what is the hardship, and second, whether that hardship is unnecessary or gratuitous. It seems to me here that the answer to both questions is the same. There is no hardship, and the burden on the property owner is not unnecessary. The burden on the property owner in this case is necessary because the legislature itself has determined that Washera County and all the other counties must, carrying out a delegated responsibility under state law, establish regulations to restrict development of the nearshore areas, recognizing that development of those areas can have a significant effect if it's done in a manner that is too close to the water or too intensive, that development can be inconsistent with the protection of the public's interest in the waters.
It sounds to me like you're arguing that we get rid of the no reasonable use standard, which has no statutory basis either, and just go with the statutory language.
I think the court has the responsibility, Justice Sykes, to provide direction to boards of adjustment and counties on what it means for there to be a hardship and for it to be unnecessary. And I think the line of cases that this court has made generally do that pretty effectively. They identify what an unnecessary hardship is. And obviously the court needs to fill in where the legislature has not. But the legislature clearly hasn't said that a use variance is treated this way and an area variance is treated another. Justice Sykes, in your majority opinion in the Outagamie County case, you pointed out that the treatises sometimes state that an area variance generally has less impact on the neighborhood. And for that reason, area variances generally, in many of the states, are granted in accordance with a somewhat less restrictive standard than a use variance. I think the word generally, in your opinion, is important, because in many cases, area variances are or can be relatively inconsequential. On the other hand, this is a case where the state itself has mandated Washera County to establish a 75-foot area in which it aims to maintain habitat for the protection of the water quality of that lake and the plants and animals that depend on the water in that lake and the lands that immediately adjoin that public resource. And I think if the court is going to consider some kind of two-step standard, it would certainly be inappropriate to establish one that says the first step is to decide whether it's use or area, a topic that I think by itself could fill many cases with much interesting parsing of language. And if it is merely an area variance, then there's some relaxed standard. The test I think that would be more appropriate would go along the lines of the concurrence that was joined by Justice Crooks and Justice Wilcox that and is supported in the statute, which is you look at hardship in view of the purpose of that ordinance. And here, the purpose of the ordinance is a critical one to the public. It's one that has its foundations in the state constitutional protection of waters. I want to address the question that was raised by...
Just one question.
Well, yes.
From opposing counsel, we heard that he also agreed with the concurrence. There must be some difference, isn't there?
Perhaps the difference is how we evaluate the purpose. Counsel argues in bold print in the first argument of his reply brief that this is not a shoreland zoning case. Well, I submit to you that this is a shoreland zoning case. This is a case in which a building has been constructed which is not in conformity with a statewide standard that aspires to have the first 75 feet back from our public lakes free from major structures so that biology can happen there, and not the kind of biology that involves swatting flies on a porch or an interior.
I guess my question then, but this is a non-conforming use, so it does not, we don't have this pristine 75 feet. We already have a house there and houses on both sides and all around the lake. And they're within, beyond the 75 feet. So
exactly so.
That's the issue before.
And I think it's a critical distinction because What the law does in this area, or should do in my view, is to recognize that and accommodate it. There are a number of accommodations in the law that address this. The specific authority of the county to use a setback averaging mechanism, which Washera County has elected to do so that they authorize houses well in advance of that 75-foot setback to deal with a pattern of development. There have been references made to the removal of nonconforming structures, and I agree with the assertion that the broad goal of the law is eventually to bring nonconforming structures and uses into compliance with the scheme that affects the whole community under a zoning ordinance. I don't think that that means that all nonconforming structures need to be removed. But if a nonconforming parcel, the undeveloped lot that you, Justice Wilcox, referred to, is configured in such a way that you could not build a residence that would conform, I think that's exactly the type of situation where a Board of Adjustment does have discretion to ensure that there's a reasonable use, but to do it in a manner that, insofar as it's possible, is consistent with the purposes of the ordinance. Where a structure has already been built within that setback area before the ordinance was enacted, it seems to me that it's directly contrary to a very clear and clearly established state policy to allow it to expand. You're exacerbating a problem. In Kenosha County, Mrs. Huntoon proposed to expand several feet into the setback, and the court recognized that that was inconsistent with the state's policy. Here, that has already been done, and the variance is requested to exacerbate that evil, if you will. I don't think that under the facts of this case there's a basis to find that the Howes are suffering a hardship by not being able to expand their substantial dwelling.
Mr. O'Connor, you're relying on the concurrence in Outagamie County for the principle of law. Yet, if you push on that concurrence, as I read the concurrence and have reread it, it ultimately takes the position that the persons could build, even though it was non-conforming use, and add the sun porch and out of game account. You can read the case as an estoppel case, too. But it seems to me, and I don't think you were counsel for anybody in that case, but it seems to me that you would have opposed that addition in Outagamie, applying the principles, and therefore oppose the addition here, applying the same principles. So do you agree with the bottom line in Outagamie, and how do you distinguish the bottom line on the concurrence from this case?
I guess the way that I would answer that question is to say you're correct. I wasn't counsel to any party in that case.
That's
and
not
I'm not intimately familiar with the record in that case. But it did seem to me that it was critical to where that case came down, that it appeared that the Department of Natural Resources had promulgated an administrative rule that may have exceeded its authority, and it also appeared that there were legal arguments that were being raised quite far along in the process of review in that case. I see the Outagamie case as reflecting certainly the divergence of views on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, but also representing a very unusual fact situation.
Well, also, Outagamie County involved floodplain zoning, and you don't care about floodplains, do you? You care about lakes, right?
The case that's before the court today is a shoreland case. Floodplains ordinances, like shoreland ordinances, have this very unique feature, and I thought that what the League of Wisconsin Municipalities did in their briefing in describing this enormous difference between the state-mandated zoning, where local governments are effectively acting as agents of the state government under shoreland and floodplain, is entirely different than the wholly voluntary enabling authority provided to cities and villages in Chapter 62 and to counties for their general zoning.
Well,
so I would have an interest in floodplain zoning because I think there are important consequences to lake water quality from the development of floodplain areas. But in terms of the standard of reasonable use in light of the purpose, I think that you should look at the purpose in a very different light. If, you know, the purpose of this ordinance may very well be Washera County had to adopt it because it was a mandate of state law.
Why aren't you arguing that four justices of this court have already decided that the standard is no reasonable use of the property in light of the purpose of the applicable zoning regulations? That's the standard you want?
That is what I would support.
I just quoted from my dissent.
I think that got 2 votes.
Pardon me? That got 2 votes, and then when you add the concurrence of Justice Crooks joined by Wilcox, you got 4.
Well, the issue is, which side did we join?
If I can make one final remark to a point that was raised by Mr. Justice Prosser, you talked about the legal nonconforming structures and the need to remove them and how that would gut the local economy. Our members in the Wisconsin Association of Lakes are very concerned about the flip side of that. We're concerned that if the court significantly relaxes the standards and permits variances so that buildings can be expanded vertically or horizontally within that setback area, that it will have a detrimental effect on the value of the property that's already there and reduce the value of the real estate that is in conformance with the ordinance on the waterfront. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Mr. O'Connor. Mr. McGrath.
Yes, sir. Was there another question?
Mr. McGrath, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you. I'd like to make 3 points in the rebuttal. There's a public policy issue here about what the correct standard should be. Should there be a different standard for shoreland zoning variances than others? I don't believe the statutes permit a different standard because they're the same statutes. But I do want to make the point on behalf of my client that that public policy issue shouldn't affect my client because our case isn't shoreland zoning. Opposing counsel just said that this particular statute was required by state, this ordinance was required by state law. That's not the case. Washera County could have had strict averaging, and my client's property would then be legal conforming, and they wouldn't need a variance. So it was the discretion of Washera County and not state law that got us to the result we're in of legal nonconforming, and therefore it should be the discretion of Washera County as to whether or not we satisfy the purposes of their 50% rule. So without regard to what this court decides about whether there should be a different standard for shoreland zoning or other cases, that should not affect my client. Second, I want to pick up on, I think, Justice Wilcox's hypothetical and a comment by Justice Sykes. If we came to the Washera County Board with a with this parcel of property vacant, and we asked to build a house that was square and that was 30 feet from the shoreline, the same as all of our neighbors, Washera County would have the discretion to grant us that variance, because I think even the DNR concedes we'd have no reasonable use if we couldn't put up a property. Why should the house be any different? Why shouldn't they be able to have a house that's 30 feet from Washera, from the high water set mark, and that's square? The historical circumstance is they don't, because they had a neighbor that was right there that would have been infringed. They no longer have that neighbor because they have reduced the density on that lake. The other point that I would like to address is, will this have any effect on the lake? And the answer is, Chief Justice, even during the building, it won't, as Judge Rogensack pointed out in her dissent in the Court of Appeals decision, because the condition of our building permit is that we have to construct in a way that we have no effect on the lake. So we have Mr. and Mrs. Howe, who are property owners in this state, who want to put their property to a reasonable use, one permitted by the zoning code, that if they came before us with an empty parcel of property, they'd be allowed to have, that Washera County, not the state statute, has created the law that presents the issue of making us legal nonconforming, and that Washera County has said, it's okay, you can do it. And the only reason that got reversed by the trial court and by the Court of Appeals is because they interpreted Kenosha County to say, if you have a reasonable use without a variance, you lose. That should not be the law in this state. That's an unworkable standard, and it stole from the Washera County Board of Adjustment the discretion that it was granted by the legislature.
Well, are you saying that this is really a county ordinance interpretation case and not a state statute case?
I'm saying that, yes, this is the Washera County Board of Adjustment applying its 50% rule because it could have made us legal conforming under state law.
Okay, it could have, but it didn't.
It did not.
And it has to follow the rules it sets up, the ordinance that it sets up. And if it wants to change that, it should change the ordinance.
Judge, I would say that it has the discretion to apply its ordinance, and it did that, and it used its discretion to grant us the variance. And that was only reversed because of the interpretation by the trial court and the Court of Appeals of what I consider to be the unworkable standard in Kenosha County. Thank you.
Got it. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Any further questions? Thank you. If not, that concludes our argument on 02-2400, State versus Washera County Board of Adjustments. Thank you, Mr. McGrath. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. And thank you, Mr. O'Connor, for an interesting argument on this case. The students may remain here if they're staying.